just more than 2 weeks to go until Brexit, and both sides say now a deal is still possible. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. The will-they, won't-they between the UK and the European Union continues today with perhaps a slightly more optimistic tone. The EU's chief Brexit negotiator, Michel Barnier, said this morning a good and balanced trade agreement with Britain is still possible, and negotiating teams will give it every chance. Hopes of a deal as early as this week is sending key European benchmarks up in the 1% range, while gains on London's FTSE 100 are limited by a rally in the pound. The British currency is up more than 1% against both the US dollar and the euro. The BBC's Will Bain has more on how negotiations are rumbling on.
The noise is coming from the weekend's talks between the UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson and the EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen were not promising. The Prime Minister saying no deal at all was now the most likely outcome. But both said the talks still had some legs and that negotiators would go the extra mile to solve issues like fishing rights and a level playing field for businesses to operate under post-Brexit. The problem is, for all the athletic language, the ultimate finishing line of December 31st is looming into view pretty quickly. Michel Barnier said this morning that a fair agreement was still possible. The issue is there's not much time for many more extensions like Sunday's. In London, I'm the BBC's Will Bain for Marketplace.
Well, as Brexit negotiations continue, another uncertainty looms for parts of Britain, whether coronavirus movement restrictions will tighten just in time for Christmas. London's mayor has urged school closures and says the surge in COVID-19 cases in the capital is deeply concerning. Meanwhile, in Europe, Germany is going ahead with a full lockdown starting on Wednesday. It'll stay in place until at least January 10th. That won't be welcome news for many businesses that'll be forced to shut down again.
It has a big impact on me personally, because my shop will have to close. I think the measures definitely make sense, because hospital beds are full.
We probably should have taken stronger action earlier, but it would have had a huge impact on a lot of businesses. So that's the problem.
A cautious understanding there then from some in Berlin, and as the BBC's Damian McGuinness explains, the country's economy minister says another lockdown-induced recession is avoidable this time around.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because you'd think that if you close the economy down, that's going to have a big economic impact. But actually, economists here are saying this is the way to save the economy. Because if you don't do that now, we're going to have this drag out and essentially have to lock down later. The advantage of doing it over Christmas is that in Germany, a lot of shops tend to close anyway during the holiday period itself. Schools are also not operational. So the government has made quite a drastic decision. It's come quite suddenly, but the economic impact, according to economists, could well be minimal.
So taking advantage of a lull maybe in people's schedules, and the government is also unleashing some kind of stimulus to help businesses cope with this lockdown.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we've had two big bailout packages already. So what's now going to happen is it's going to be your running costs are going to be pretty much covered. It's quite a complicated calculation between how much business you can still do and how much the government's going to give you. But essentially, the idea is to keep these businesses going until we can leave lockdown. Now, so far, that's worked. Since March, Germany has seen various forms of partial lockdowns, full lockdowns, and the economic hit has been relatively minimal.
The BBC's Damian McGuinness for us in Berlin. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Victoria.
For the last 2 weeks, Australian winemakers have been contending with new Chinese tariffs of up to 212%. China alleges some Australian wine is being sold cheaper than in its home market, though Australia rejects that assertion. China is the biggest destination for Australian wine exports, so the tariffs have been a bit of a problem for winemakers like Rod Hill at Sirome Wines on the country's east coast.
Obviously, the initial feedback from our customers is not overly positive because it is a large increase in terms of the import duties and what have you we were paying before. But it's also not permanent. So we're looking at, I guess, how we look at our business immediately and, more importantly, how we look at our business with China in the future. So it's between 25 and 30% of our blended wine business. You know, we're in a fortunate position. I think there's a lot of wineries that have a lot higher percentage of their business with China than we do. And I think also they probably don't have the diversification that we have in our business model.
Are you still planning to export the same amount of wine to China because of these tariffs? Are you just going to sort of wait it out?
We will probably have to take some of the pain of that tariff into our margin. just so that we can continue to look after our customers that we've built a direct relationship with over many years. But of course, you know, with 212%, it's very hard to take all that pain. But saying that, we entered China with a view that it was a long-term strategy. It's the fastest growing wine market in the world. We're still there. We're not walking away. We love our Chinese customers. We'll continue to look after them. And we will just work through the challenges that this poses.
And you mentioned doing more direct-to-consumer offerings in China, but what about elsewhere? What does all of this mean for the supply that you now have to try and move? Are you working on finding other business models in your domestic market to sort of make up for that?
In our target, which is that premium end, obviously it's a global market and there is only a certain amount of super premium wine available. We're fortunate that we can go to other markets like the USA, like Japan and Europe. We haven't done anything in Europe at this stage, but obviously when certain channels become more difficult to operate in, you look at other channels that the barrier to entry might be less.
Now, Rod, this tariff battle sort of comes at the same time that you're already struggling from the impact of COVID-19 on your business. You also run a restaurant, you have lodging for people, you run vineyard experiences. How are you thinking about the business going forward in 2021 with the impact of all of these different factors?
Like a lot of businesses, we've had to adapt and reset through that. And it is looking at our whole business and going, okay, well, what can we do that we know we can do well and get a return on under these circumstances? And again, we're fortunate in Australia and in Queensland that a lot of the COVID-19 restrictions have been relaxed. We'll be able to put on a concert for 10,000 people in February, which will be sensational.
Rod Hill, the general manager at Ciro May Wines. Thanks so much for your time.
No problem, Victoria. Thank you.
Well, this might come as welcome news for wineries that attract travelers from around the world. Tourism between New Zealand and Australia could see a bump in the early part of 2021. That's after New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern said today her cabinet agreed in principle to a travel bubble with the country's neighbor, but only if COVID-19 cases remain low. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.